Welcome to Chicago Jazz Revealed, the show that introduces you to the people and places that create the jazz scene here in Chicago. I'm your host, Mike Jeffers, the publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine, and I invite you to sit back and listen as I reveal the people and places that make up the Chicago jazz scene. Welcome back to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine. We are here every Wednesday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on 90.9 FM WDCB and extended podcasts on chicagojazz.com. That first tune we just heard was from Chicago vocalist Patricia Barber. She's going to have a show coming up this Saturday, April 26th, at Logan Center for the Performing Arts, and she actually has a very interesting combination. She's going to be performing with world-renowned drummer Ari Honig is coming in with his trio from New York, and it's going to be quite a show at the Logan Center for the Performing Arts. More information available at WDCB.org. But that tune that we just heard was off of her album from, over 10 years ago, but I still love it, Nightclub, and the name of that tune was Summer Samba. On tonight's show, I thought it would be interesting to go back in and take a listen to some of the past interviews I've done. Last fall, when I was broadcasting from Katarina's, I interviewed Lori Shelley, a vocalist in town, and she's actually got a show coming up at Katarina's May 2nd at 6:30 p.m. Katarina's is, of course, at 1920 West Irving Park Road. And I sat down with Lori. We talked a lot about how she got started, but also her many, many years with the great composer, world-renowned pianist Michel Legrand. So let's take a listen. We'll pick it up with Lori Shelley here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB. But why don't we just start off, because I know that I'm curious. I mean, how did you get started even singing? How did that come about?
Well, I guess, you know, you're born with a voice. Both my parents were musicians. My mother was a singer, and my father was a violinist. And
so it was a musical family then you were in.
Yeah. And both my sisters sang. And actually, I think it's kind of funny. I have two sisters, and we would sing together and harmonize, but they always pushed me away because I think I was a bit of a ham.
You?
Let me in there.
Not you. A ham, no.
And I'm the youngest, too, so, okay. You know. Controlling or whatever, but yeah, so you know, we start out doing that, and then all I wanted to do was sing. You know, when everybody was out of the house, I put on records and, you know, was always singing along, putting on my own little shows. Imagine you're singing with the hairbrush in the hand.
Oh, you were that person.
I was that person, definitely.
Now, what, like, was it pop stuff? I mean, what
was
jazz
influence?
Stuff?
What, yeah. Everything. I mean, I was actually really a little kid, and I'd get up Sunday mornings and watch the Jubilee Showcase. That was a gospel show. So that was a big influence. And listening to my father's, you know, albums. He had his own orchestra. In fact, the conductor that conducted for Jerry Lewis conducted for my father. So he was really brilliant. And I would listen to a jazz. You know, I think you go to what you want to hear, mm-hmm. but it's everything. I love rock. I love rock and roll. So, you know, I saw the Allman Brothers in concert and Journey. And so everything I wanted to get involved in. And I liked everything, from Cream to rock and roll to R&B.
And, of course, jazz.
And theater. You know, I loved it all. If it's good, I like it.
So that's the whole time you were growing up and you were in high school and mm-hmm. everything. Were you in theater? Were you in doing
yes.
performances?
Yes. In high school, there was potpourri, so I was part of that theater thing, you know, mm-hmm. and sang. And I went to a theater camp from being seven years old till I was 14 every summer called Harang Camp in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. Very well-known theater camp. They had a theater. They had theaters there, but they also had a theater called the Forrest Tucker Theater, named after the actor who came there. And we put our hands in cement, like all the stars, you know, do that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So I was in all the shows there, and was a big part of my
now,
life.
Did you grow up in Chicago?
I grew up in Glencoe, Illinois,
oh,
but in
okay.
Chicago.
All
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, and I love it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So from there, you went through high school doing all the music mm-hmm. stuff and everything. After mm-hmm. high school, what happened? Where did you go?
That's a good question. Where did I go?
Did you come back?
I didn't.
Wherever you went, did you come back?
I think I tried out for some shows, you know, didn't get the part. Pippin, you know, 17 years old, but it was a big production. Ben Vereen was in
like
it.
Like in Chicago.
Yeah. In fact, Joe Vito was the pianist playing for the auditions.
Really?
Yeah, I'd get there, and it was like, okay, don't look at him because you're going to laugh. So I did my famous Barbara Streisand song, Flim Flam Man, and didn't get it. I wasn't right for it, but it was, you know, it was good. And I just kept singing until I started to... through my brother-in-law, Bill Scott, I met Joe Vito and other musicians, and I started to do, you know, private gigs, jobbing dates.
Okay.
Like when I was 17.
Really?
George Allen was the first orchestra leader that I did a jobbing gig for, and that was, you know, that was the end of that. I just kept doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those were the days when there was a lot of work to be had.
There was a lot of work, and it was really one singer, you know, unless a guitarist or somebody else in the orchestra sang, where today it's, you know, four or five singers right in the front there. And I did that, and I was, you know, really one of the busiest female singers doing it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I also, the demanding thing about that was that you really had to sing everything.
Right, yeah, you have to not only sing
all
jazz,
it.
You're singing everything. Because
everything.
You're
the
doing
top 40,
the
rock, you know, R&B, and so I could, and I did, and that kept me really busy.
Yeah.
You know.
So now, doing all of that, and you're jobbing, and you're probably slammed every single weekend, you're working constantly,
yes.
Are you still hitting clubs, are you still sitting in, are you
yeah,
still
it's
playing
interesting.
Clubs?
Yeah, I did a lot of work at the Bulls. I was just talking to a friend of mine about that.
Jazz Bulls, right?
One of the best clubs. I was there, playing there all the time, hanging all the time. It was, everybody was. Everybody didn't just play there, everybody hung there. You know, it was like downstairs, and it just was like, you know, you walked in there, and it just became your life for that night.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cool. The best thin crust pizza. Ken Chaney, Frank Russell was there. Louise Everling played there. But it was a great place, and I did a lot of work there, and I actually brought Mark Colby and Frank Caruso together because I hired them both. Yeah, it was my band. I hired them both. Tomas Keeney and Lee, who was on drums?
Mo.
Mo Jennings?
Oh, Mo Jennings.
Yes.
Yep.
And Marlene Rosenberg did gigs with me there. I think even Luis might have. Yeah, that's right. Joan Hickey. So I was there. I did a lot of work with Dick Judson and all, you know, he was like the top guys.
Right.
And as far as jobbing, so, you know, I was there. I'm trying to think where else I was. That was
well, but
a couple
so
other
you're
places.
Getting your chops together.
I'm getting
and
my
all
chops
that
together,
down.
And I loved it, you know.
Yeah.
And then things changed a little more, you know.
So you went from that, and how did you, was how did you get the gig with Michelle Legrand? Is that how that happened, that you were playing somewhere?
You know, I was always hanging out with musicians, more so than singers, always jamming at somebody's place. You know, you had your really good friends. We'd all jam together. That's something I miss, you know, just for nothing. It had nothing to do with money. It had only to do with music. And then we'd all go out and eat some, like, really cool food and have a great time. So I was doing the club thing, and then one day a gentleman named Randy Waldman, who I was very good friends with, who is a major name now, he plays with Barbara and Streisand and George Benson, he's in LA. So he called me up. I'm leaving my apartment. It was about, my gosh, I think I was 19, almost 20. We won't discuss that now, but a million years ago. And the phone rings. And by the way, I was listening to this person you're about to get into with me and discuss Michelle Legrand since I've been a child, my early 13 years old, 14. So I gravitated to his music instantly through an album called Jack Jones Sings Michelle Legrand that was introduced to me by my brother-in-law. And he put it on, and I couldn't help myself. It was so magnificent. And I was always into unusual things for my age. So I get this call. I ran back to get this phone. Literally, the door is closing, and he says, you want to go hear Michelle Legrand at Mr. Kelly's, a great club that is no longer
here.
Wow,
he was so playing with a trio or something over there?
He was playing with Steve Gilmore on bass. These are top-notch guys. Bill Goodwin on drums. I mean, these guys have played with Bill Evans and everybody, and Phil Woods. You know, as they say, the ear to Charlie Parker, alto sax, and a string quartet from the Chicago Symphony. It was magnificent. So, and Mr. Kelly's, of course, is known for having everybody from Barbara Streisand to Sarah Vaughan to Bette Midler, Barry Manilow, mm-hmm. you know.
Yep.
And so I said, sure, let's go. I'll go, you know. So I quickly, you know, got myself together and met him there and went in. And just, it was incredible that I was sitting there listening to him and this small band that he had. And afterwards, should I keep going here? Afterwards, I went up to
him. Well, everybody's listening to what you're saying. I would continue on, yeah.
I went up to him and, you know, also on these gigs, you know, I'm doing, what are you doing the rest of your life? I'm doing his music.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, thank you. You know, it was wonderful. I love your music. I love singing it. And he wanted to know if I had anything recorded. I said, no. And Randy and I were talking about doing something in the basement of his parents' home because he had a little studio there. And so, you know, I don't remember if I said, I'll get back to you or what. So then I left. And then the next night, a bunch of jazz musicians, I always hung out with the best, some of the best musicians in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could say they were my mentors without me realizing it. So I always hung out with them, and they all were going to, you know, of course, you're, you know, the god of saxophones. And they wanted to go. And so I said, yeah, let's go. And I went back, and Michelle saw me.
Yeah.
And they were all in a break sitting at a table. And he said, did you bring, you know, something, a cassette, that C word? And I said, no, because it was yesterday. And so everybody's sitting there, Phil Woods, his manager, Marvin Stamm was playing trumpet
New
York. So I said, so everybody got silent, and I said, well, why don't you play for me and I'll sing? And they looked at me like, who does she think she is? What kind of a nut is she? And it real silent, and all of a sudden he goes, okay, why don't you come be here tomorrow? And I'm like, okay. So I went and had lunch with Marvin Stamm the next day,
mm-hmm.
and we had lunch, and then we were walking to Mr. Kelly's, and I'm walking with him going, I can't believe this is happening to me. I'm going to sing for Michelle LeGrand.
Right.
And, you know, when you're young, you're kind of just all over the place, you know, and you know it's exciting, but you just... you go with it, and you're free. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're a different mindset than, you know.
Yeah, you're
later.
Not overanalyzing it. You're just going with it.
No,
you're just doing it.
No, and so so I went there, and he was having the piano tuned, and so I didn't even think, what am I going to sing? I don't remember any of that. So I started to sing, and I sang Bye Bye Blackbird, and Scatted, and then I sang, of course, Pieces of Dreams,
mm-hmm.
which is on RCA Records. Oh, I have the in my bag. Anyway, I recorded that with him live. And so I sang that to him. Can you imagine? I'm singing that song to the man that wrote it, and he's playing it. And he was very happy. Oh, it's wonderful. And then I said, can I sing one more song? And he said, no, you know, this is good. And when I said the song, he said, sure. And I said, You Must Believe in Spring, which only Barbara Streisand and Sarah Vaughan recorded because it's very rangy.
Mm-hmm.
So he was curious. So I sang that, and I'd say that sealed the deal.
Yeah.
And they were looking for somebody, actually, to replace a singer that was touring with them. And as they say, the rest is history.
You got the gig.
I got the gig.
You didn't even know you were auditioning for a gig.
No, I did not even think of that. And the next week, I got his demo of all his songs.
Mm-hmm.
Learned those, and
so that was it. So then he just hired you right then and there, and said,
yeah.
Well, we're starting
his
next
manager
week.
Manager got in touch with me. Yeah, it was really, and I was invited because he was there like 4 or 5 days or 4 days. I don't remember. So I was invited after that to come every night. You know, obviously I didn't have to pay for anything,
right.
And they asked me to come back and, you know, hang, and wanted me to hear him, and it was really incredible.
Yeah,
it was absolutely incredible time of my life.
Yeah. What an experience.
Incredible. Now, still, you know, I'm that way about his music.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Now, was this like, I mean, you were what, 20 years old or so,
yeah,
at this
20.
Point?
Yeah, I was 20.
So, I mean, this was fairly like, it was prime time for him, right?
He was like in his 40s.
Yeah.
And what was amazing is, you know, the concerts we did with 92-piece symphonies and 36-piece orchestras. And, you know, the minute you hear... Brian's song, bum, ba-dum, bum, bum,
mm-hmm.
the whole audience would go crazy. Or you know, yeah, you know his music. And then we would, if it was a single bill, just him, there would be two, you know, parts of the show. And the first part, what was ironic, is I would sing Pieces of Dreams with him. He'd start playing. I'm getting like the shakes here. I'm like, I am verklempt. He'd start playing, and then I'd sing. And then in the middle, he'd get up. Another pianist would take over and bring in the whole orchestra, and it was huge.
Oh, yeah.
And when it was a double bill, I wouldn't, and I would sing some jazz with him. We always did this duet from The Abodes of Cherbourg. It's a jazz opera with Catherine Deneuve, and it is all sung. So the song I Will Wait for You and Watch What Happens comes from this jazz opera. And it's very hip. The man was probably in his 20s when he wrote it. He's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would do a 13-minute duet from the movie, and it was very, very passionate. I mean, we looked like we were madly in love. It was acting.
Yeah.
We would touch this, you know, nose to nose practically, and it was incredible, you know, to sing. I'm reliving it as I'm thinking and talking about this, how incredible, you know. You can't know until you're there doing
right.
it and listening to, you know, 90 some odd musicians playing some of the greatest music I think ever written in the
mm-hmm.
world.
Well, that had to be something because, I mean, you grew up listening to it, and now all of a sudden you're like, you're the person.
Plus, I got to work with Ron Carter, Grady Tate, Phil Woods, Randy Brecker,
yeah.
Joe Beck on guitar, all in one. You know, Phil would come tour with us, but, you know, at the St. Regis Hotel, all of those guys all at once.
Yeah.
So I'm on an album of RCA Records that they recorded the show live. And he put Pieces of Dreams on there. And then they made an album of Michel Legrand, the RCA years. And then they did another one, The Best, and like in 2007. So I'm still on that. And they now took the album of Michel Legrand and Friends last year, 2012, in October, and it's now on CD.
Oh, no
so,
kidding.
So, I mean, I'm on RCA, folks. RCA.
I wondered why I had to call six different people just to try to schedule an interview
with
you.
That's Man. It, darling. You know.
Now, do you have a copy of that here?
You know.
Do you even have a copy
I have
of
a
it?
Copy
do
of you? The album, yeah. and I... I didn't bring it. I'm on vinyl. I do have it.
Oh, on vinyl.
Yes,
on vinyl.
But you mean the Michel Legrand and Friends? I have something with me.
Well, I'm just thinking maybe we should play the tune since you just talked all about it. Is there a song that you're on that we could play right
well,
now?
Well, it's Pieces of Dreams with
Pieces
Michel.
Pieces of Dreams with Michel. All right, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we take a listen to that, and then we'll come back with more of Lori Shelley here on
Thank
Chicago
you.
Jazz Revealed.
Thank you.
On WDCB.
Thanks.
All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, and we are here on WDCB 90.9 FM. It's okay to clap. It's okay to talk. I like that. We got cheers and clapping. That's good. And it's only Tuesday. Wait till this crowd gets to Friday.
Wow.
Holy cow. I hope they keep drinking what they're drinking right now. So we're here with Lori Shelley, and we just talked all about how she met Michel Legrand, went on tour with Michel Legrand, recorded with Michel Legrand. We just heard the song Pieces of Dreams from the RCA years, which is a new, I mean, they just re-released this, so this is
well,
where people can find this, right?
This one was in 2007, but the one they re-released was Michel Legrand and Friends,
oh,
which
that's
was
right.
recorded
okay.
live at the St. Regis. I don't have a copy of that.
Okay.
I have a copy of the album, and that was, you know, pretty wonderful to hear that was being put out on, mm-hmm. You know, CD.
So you're touring with him and doing everything.
Right.
And then after you left him, things probably just slowed down or whatever for him. So then the band kind of started other things.
You know, I just kind of, I was into doing some of my own things. And it just kind of slowed down a little. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were looking for me, I found out. This is a hard one. I didn't know this until I reunited with Michel,
mm-hmm.
by the way, recently.
Well, you just went up to...
I got in touch with his manager,
Minnesota, right?
A newer manager. Yeah, at 2011, in April, I think it was, at the Dakota Jazz Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we got in touch with his manager, and he's like, where have you been? And I did not know that, you know, because you move, you know, I was staying at my sister's, getting my own place. And
this was before, like, you know, when you guys stopped touring, that you didn't have the cell phones, you didn't have GPS,
nothing.
They couldn't track
nothing
you down.
Nothing at all. And
now you just go on Facebook, and there's, you know, there she is.
There
okay,
she
no
is.
Problem.
Right, that's amazing. And so they were looking for me some years later, and I did not know that. So, I mean, that made me feel good and, you know,
sure.
not good at the same time.
Right. How long have they been
great.
Looking?
Right. So, anyway, he was very glad to hear from me. His manager, his earlier manager that I had met, had passed. And I sent him the CD overnight, and he said, you know, Michelle was going to be in New York. I actually wish I had gone there instead of Minneapolis, but I decided to drive there. So they wanted me to sing, and mm-hmm. I, you know, met him there after all these years and reunited and sang two of the shows. Well, it was four shows, two a night, and it was pretty wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there anything else coming up with him? Have you been in touch with him
no,
a little
there
bit?
No, there was something that his manager was hoping, you know, that would happen, a tour in, actually that October, but it got canceled.
Mm.
And he has a company that books him internationally. I just want to say, though, that when I did perform with him, John Patitucci on bass and Willie Jones III on drums, and they were just magnificent.
And it was just a trio.
It was just a trio.
Yeah.
And it was packed. It's a great club. You know, there's a upper level. The food is great, and it was packed every show.
How old is he now? He's got to be in his
80,
80s, right?
80.
Is
he 80? He's 80.
Wow.
Don't ask me.
Probably tons of energy, right?
Yeah. It's amazing. You know, he's still composing and doing, you know, he's composed for ballet and shows, you know, and he doesn't stop.
Why don't we, to close out the interview here, why don't we hear one more tune from your release that you have out now.
Okay.
Why don't we hear So Many Stars?
Okay, great.
And this is Lori Shelley. It's called Pieces of Dreams, and we're going to hear So Many Stars. Now, this is something that obviously they can pick up at your gigs.
And my gigs are on iTunes.
Or on iTunes.
Amazon.com
and of course
or CD Baby.
And your website is chicagojazz.com
www.chicagojazz.com/LauryShelley.
Well, there'll also be a link on chicagojazz.com's podcast, but they can find everything out.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
This has been great.
Pleasure.
All right, well, let's take a listen to one more tune here from Lori Shelley. So Many Stars here on WDCB 90.9 FM and chicagojazz.com. Welcome back to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine here on 90.9 FM, WDCB, every Wednesday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. We're going to take a listen now to another interview I did back in the fall, and this is with another vocalist in Chicago. We're keeping a little theme going here. The great Sam Fazio stopped by. We had a great time at Katarina's back in the fall, and Sam talks about how he got his start, his regular performances, his performing in New York, and of course his new release. So let's pick it up with Sam, where he tells us a little bit about how he got started singing.
I actually went to music school at DePaul in vocal performance and opera performance, and back then, this was a while ago, they didn't have a vocal jazz program there at the time, and so the only way you could study voice there was in an opera performance. But it sort of gave me a solid solid framework for singing that I could apply to whatever I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of took pop lessons on the side with a different teacher outside the school.
So did you
system.
Go to school for music? You
I
went
did.
For music, okay.
Yeah.
Vocal performance?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Then after that, I was performing a little bit with this girl I went to school with. We sort of had this little duo act and moved out to Las Vegas for a while.
Oh, well, you moved to Las Vegas? I didn't know anything about this. Now it's getting interesting.
Vegas,
okay.
Yeah. But, you know, it was the late 80s, and we were young, and it was fun, but I was young.
Playing
and
like casinos and stuff?
Yeah, we played ballets. We did openings for, remember that comedy club? What was the name of that comedy club?
The only one I know is like the Laugh Factory or something.
No,
else.
It was sort of in the Hyatts. It was in all the Hyatt hotels. I can't think of it right now. It'll come to me.
Okay.
But we'd open up for some of the comedians there and then played the casino lounges.
Were you doing like pop stuff?
We were doing pop stuff, whatever was on the radio at the time. So.
And was she playing piano?
No, we were both singing. We were a duo group. You might have heard of us, Reservations for Two.
Yes, yes, I knew it. I knew it.
We were a big hit, yeah.
I knew it. So did you have a band behind you or just tracks? Or?
No, we had a band, you know, depending on the gig, yeah.
Right.
So we did that for about a year out there and then
Reservations
moved back
to for
Homer.
Two. Yeah. I love that. That's like so 80s. Kind
yeah,
of, you know,
it was very
like
80s, yeah.
Okay, so then you decided that you got tired of Las Vegas or you got tired of your partner and said, okay, you know what, I'm going a solo career here.
Yeah, you know, and plus just, you know, we were young and like I said, you know, away from my family in early age.
Yeah.
It was sort of just a, and Las Vegas was a lot different back then, you know, it wasn't like it was now. So, you know, we lived a few blocks away from the Strip, but there was nothing in between us and the Strip except
right.
desert. And so there wasn't a whole lot to do. It was hard to make friends there. And so it was just a different time. So came back here and sang a little bit around town, but then, you know, needed to sort of figure out how I was going to make a living. And so,
that whole thing.
Yeah.
Huh?
So, I actually went back to school then and got a master's degree in gerontology and then a PhD in developmental psychology and worked as a psychologist for
wow.
the past, 25 years and just sort of reignited all this in 2009 when I got back into music again. So
you actually took some time off from music. You went
yeah.
to school. You just said, enough of this.
Yeah, you know, I said, you know, I still did stuff here and there, but I really just, you know, decided to sort of switch careers for a while and sort of went into working with older adults.
Mm-hmm. So you're still doing that?
I'm still doing that. That's what I do in the day. I worked for the National Alzheimer's Association for about
oh,
the past
wow.
20 years. So I've always worked with defining quality care standards for people with the disease. So do that during the day and sing at night. Sometimes it's a little difficult to do both, especially
yeah.
those late night gigs.
Yeah, I can imagine, right? You get home at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
those
are tough. Yeah.
You have to kind of be on top of your game, I would imagine, when
yeah.
you're at work, too.
Yeah.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about this new CD. I Wish You Love. Now, is this your first CD, or do you have another one out before this
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I had one out before that called The Songs I Love, Songs We Love. And,
that's right.
Yeah,
okay.
And this one. This
that was
one,
a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, it was. Out? It was sort of my first one. It was sort of a collection of a lot of different tunes, some pops, that, you know, and so this one I think I spent a lot more time really thinking through a concept and really mm-hmm. looking at the whole you know, it's a whole sort of journey of love, whether it be falling in love or losing love or longing for love, but all sort of all different concepts of love. And then really spent some time, you know, putting some good music behind it. Chris White really did some great arrangements on all these tunes
mm-hmm.
and got some great players on it with some bigger band than it was before.
Right. Well, so when you got back into music, what sparked you? You're working during the day now. You've got your doctorate, you're set, but you still had that yearning to still be
yeah,
a performer.
Yeah, you know, there's still a big piece that was missing from my life then. So, you know, it was sort of something that I never felt that I completely fulfilled. And so it was just always a piece nagging at me. And I was at sort of a different point where I didn't need to rely on it to make a living and to, you know, survive. But, you know, now I could sort of re-explore it, and it's been better than it was before. So
yeah.
It's been a great thing to get back into, and it's really been.
So you've been, I guess my question is, like, I mean, you know, how do you get back into the scene? Because you went to Vegas, and then you came back here, and then you just kind of let everything kind of lie low. I mean, did you start sitting in places? Did you start hanging out? Did you just say, hey, you know what? I'm just going to start singing again, and I'm just going to go get some gigs. And
yeah, I said, I'm just going to start singing again. I went back to my vocal coach that I used to take lessons from back in the day and sort of started taking lessons again. And I would say after about maybe 6-8 months, and I felt like it was all sort of getting there again. And my voice was different than it was 20 years earlier, so we explored some new things to do and then put together a demo CD and just got it out there and started getting gigs, you know, and building it up, yeah.
It's just that easy. It's just that easy.
No,
man.
It hasn't been that easy, but I mean, you know, just, you know.
That's
you
what
know,
happened.
One thing led to another.
Right.
Yeah, you just sort of keep, and I'm pretty persistent and sort of just kept bugging people till they hire me, I guess.
You said, all right, fine, yeah. Just come in already, Sam.
Yeah.
Jesus. Well, why don't we take a listen to a track off of your latest CD, which is called I Wish You Love, Sam Fazio, and it's on Blue Jazz Records. This first tune we're going to hear is Let There Be Love. And I guess everything kind of works together with the love theme and all that. As I'm looking through this, For All We Know, If I Could Write a Book, I Wish You Love, Missing You. So it all kind of like all works together. How did you select some of these tunes?
You know, I guess I, like I said, I was looking sort of for different types of love, not all just I love you love songs, but some that didn't turn out that great either.
Looking for love in all the wrong places.
Yeah. I didn't do that one. I would have.
That's the only one that came to my mind.
Mickey
I don't know.
Gilly, yeah.
That'll be the next album.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a listen to this first one here, Let There Be Love. It's on Sam Fazio's new release, I Wish You Love, and it's on Blue Jazz Records here on WDCB 90.9 FM and ChicagoJazz.com. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers here live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. Oh, thank you. There's always that little delay, and then they kick back in. It's all right to talk. It's all right to drink. It's all right to clap. And you can even dance. The dance floor is always open. There's not a lot to dance to when I'm talking, but the dance floor is always open. Anyways, sorry, Sam. I always digress here as it gets
problem.
Later in the evening. So we just heard the tune off of I Wish You Love, off your new album, I Wish You Love, and that was Let There Be Love. Now, you put this out on Blue Jazz Records, and it's been getting national radio play. You've been getting some nice reviews. Tell me a little bit about how it came about. You performed in New York recently.
Oh, yeah. A few months ago back, I was able to perform at Michael Feinstein's Club.
That's a tough club to get into,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, Feinstein's at the Regency. It was really probably one of the highlights of my career here. So it was really a great experience. They now have left the Lowe's and are at the Nico in San Francisco. The club moved.
Okay.
But it was, you know, I wish I was a little bit more present. It was just such a big thing that I just sort of got through it. It was a great show and everything, but I wish I was more in the moment in the show because it was
enjoying it.
Yeah, because it was really something special.
So, well, tell me a little bit. I mean, how did that happen? Did you just contact them?
I just kept
texting Michael Feinstein or something.
Answer me. No. No, I sent my stuff into the club and, you know, several times and just kept following up and, you know, they finally took a listen to it. You know, half the time is that people are just bombarded with so much stuff that it's really just somebody taking a listen and giving you a chance. I mean, it's like that at every club, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
Well, what was the significance of going to New York? Because I know that you know, you're getting it played in all these different cities throughout the country and stuff, but playing in New York and playing at Feinstein's in New York, why was that so different than going somewhere else? I mean, what was the experience like?
Well, I think, you know, Feinstein, I mentioned earlier, you know, some of the Sinatra stuff, but, you know, Feinstein brought a lot of that stuff back, a lot of the American Songbook back in sort of the late 80s into more of, like, the popular arena. And so, you know, I listened to a lot of his stuff, and you know, if I was going to perform somewhere in New York that wasn't, you know, sort of a strict jazz club, that was sort of the place that I wanted to be. And so I set that out as a goal, and, you know, it was great to be playing in a club, somebody that I thought really helped you know, bring back all that music and, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, people like him and Harry Connick Jr. and, you know, even Michael Bublé, you know, people say what you want, but, you know, it's making it all popular again.
I like Michael Bublé. I like all of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I always think about, especially like with something like what you have on this recording, and we're talking about Michael Bublé and Feinstein and those guys, you know, the thing that you're doing and what those guys are doing, they're not saying that they're like bebop jazz artists or something.
Right.
They're actually bringing in the casual music listener into the jazz world. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, hey, could you play Sway? I mean, who comes up and says, hey, could you play Sway until Michael Bublé recorded it? Now, we all know, you know, Dean Martin and everybody else recorded it, but they all want it because they heard Michael Bublé record it. And there's probably a lot of those standards now that you get requests from, like 20 and 30-year-old people, that there's no way you would have ever heard from them before until those guys recorded it, made it more popular, hip, you know, I don't want to say made it hipper, but I mean they got it into that casual music listening audience, which is what everybody should be striving to do, because when they hear this stuff, everybody likes it.
Yeah. Yeah, people will come up and request, hey, can you play that Michael Bublé song? Right. And it'll be something that, you know, isn't one of his songs. Right. But yeah.
Night
like,
and day.
Yeah, that's really, yeah. Can you play that Michael Bublé song, All of Me?
Right.
Yeah.
And you say, absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
What a great idea.
See the tip jar? Yeah.
That's right. I only remember half of it because you only put $10 in there. So, but I mean, you know, I remember you just played at the Jazz Fest, the Chicago Jazz Fest in the Jazz Oasis, and I can't tell you how many people I looked out into the crowd and there was that casual music fan because they love the American Songbook. And I always, you know, it's always funny to me, and maybe you have the same experience too, is that, you know, they'll come up and say, oh, I don't like jazz. I go, oh, okay. You like Frank Sinatra? Oh, yeah. Well, you like Ella Fitzgerald? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you, ma'am, but you like jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because the American Songbook, I think, crosses over all genres. I mean, is that what you're finding with this kind of music? I mean, you're playing, what do you have? You have Pete Miller's gigs coming up, and, of course, you have a big show coming up at Main Stage. I mean, is that kind of what you're finding with the audiences that are coming out to hear you?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and sometimes I'll try to jazz it up a little bit and try to be a little bit more less Sinatra-ish, and everybody just requests the Sinatra stuff.
Right.
So it's like, why even try, you know? So, yeah, I mean, then people want to hear the stuff that they know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, Pete Miller's, the Drake Hotel on Friday nights.
So now you're there every Friday at the Coke Door?
I'm usually there three out of four Friday nights, yeah.
Is it the Coke Door or the?
It is.
Coke Door,
yeah.
Okay, so you're at the Drake Hotel, the Coke Door, and it's samfaziomusic.com for more information.
Right.
So you're at the Coke Door three out of the four nights a month on Fridays. And the Coke Door, I should tell our listeners, too, the Coke Door is an interesting club for those of you that have never been there or don't know what we're talking about. That's the first club in Chicago they opened up right after Prohibition. It's in the Drake Hotel. And if you go down there, I believe a lot of it looks the same. I mean,
yeah.
Especially in the lobby and stuff, you can really see that 1920s. You know, look of what it looked like right after Prohibition.
Yeah, the Coke Door itself is still, you know, all, you know, red leather booths and dark walls. And I mean, it's really, really an interesting place. I've been there going on 4 years now. And so it's really been a great experience there for me. And, you know, I like because it's a, you know, it's in the hotel. There's people come to listen to the music, but there's also new people there because people are staying in the hotel or they hear that there's live music. And so it's always a really interesting crowd.
Yeah.
You know, sort of get the request for Freebird a little later in the night.
Well,
but,
you know. I think Sinatra played Freebird,
yeah,
didn't he?
So. I thought after midnight, the 12-1 crowd, you got to get a little bit more poppy and the weddings get out and so Freebird and, you know, whatever else. Sweet Caroline.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
You know, typical jazz song.
Sure, of course. Yeah. It's right after Girl from Ipanema. You always play Sweet Caroline.
Yeah.
It's a nice tie-in. Well, why don't we hear one more tune here from Samfazio off of his recording, I Wish You Love. And this last tune we're going to hear is the title track, I Wish You Love. It's on Blue Jazz Records. Now, they can get more information at samfaziomusic.com, and I'm assuming that they can find out where to purchase it.
Yep.
And I'm sure it's up on iTunes and all that other good stuff.
All those places, yeah.
This is going to be I Wish You Love, the title track off of Sam's new recording, I Wish You Love, on Blue Jazz Records, here on WDCB 90.9. FM and ChicagoJazz.com.
Thank you for listening to Chicago Jazz Revealed. To hear extended interviews with our guests and a podcast of the show, get more information at www.chicagojazz.com. I'm Mike Jeffers, and we will be back next Wednesday at 9 p.m. here on 90.9 FM WDCB. Thanks for listening.